Yeah, what's going on? Back from a little break. It's the QTR podcast. How the hell is everybody? Everybody having a good day? It's October 27th, 2020. Happy to report the world has not ended yet, but we're going to check in on the status of that with my guest today, the man, Andy Schechtman himself. First and foremost, I want to shout out my patrons. Patrons are people that make my podcast possible. They are the capitalistic engine behind the podcast. That means they give me money, and I appreciate it. And most of it I use on general corporate expenditures, such as alcohol and dinners, things of that nature. Although I did spend $500 to buy a microphone last year, so take note of that. Hello, this is the QTR Podcast. I'm going to shout out my patrons, and I'm going to give you the two rules for the podcast, and we're going to get well on our merry way. First and foremost, this podcast is brought to you by my exclusive gold and silver providers over at JM Bullion. JM Bullion is a wonderful bullion dealer that I have been using now for, I think, the better part of a year exclusively. So I haven't been buying my personal bullion from anywhere else. I think they do a fantastic job. They have been in business for over 10 years now, or right about 10 years now. They've done over $3 billion in sales, and they turn around my orders quickly. They always have a lot of things in stock, and if you are a QTR podcast listener, and maybe you are not comfortable with ordering bullion online, or you want to talk to a salesperson, or you have questions, we have our own dedicated sales rep, the lovely Kathy, K-A-T-H-Y, at jmbullion.com. If you shoot Kathy an email, tell her you're a QTR podcast listener. She will help you out with anything that you need. She'll also give you $5 off your order and free shipping if you tell her that the Q-Man sent you. So check out my wonderful partners over at JM Bullion. I appreciate your guys' continued support of the podcast. Also, too, JM Bullion just released a report that I tweeted out and then just retweeted today. So if you go to my Twitter feed, it is up on there right now. It is called Recession or Recovery, Gold in the Post-Pandemic Prognosis. It is their report essentially on what precious metals are going to do after the election's over, after COVID is over. And that's something, of course, we'll talk about with Andy Schechtman today from Miles Franklin as well. So check out that report. The link is on my Twitter. It's in the podcast description. And thank you very much to JM Bullion for your continued support. This podcast also brought to you by my homeboy, Sang Lucci. Sang Lucci runs the Sang Lucci Steam Room and the Wall Street Jesus Steam Room, which is really the best way to track money coming into the options market out there. I mean, Sang Lucci has been doing this also for about a decade now. At least I've been friends with him for heading into a decade at some point here. Wall Street Jesus was one of the originals in terms of tracking options activity to figure out where stocks may go. I mean, now with the SoftBank gamma squeezes and things like that, we know that options really drive the market. So there's really no better time to have a great tool on your side that can help you track that flow coming into the options market. It's easy to understand if you're a novice trader. The Steam Room really is a wonderful piece of software. They've been working on it for, 7-8 years now. They've had it working. It's easy to use. It's easy to understand. And the best part is Sang Lucci and Wall Street Jesus, my buddies, I've known them for years. They're honest people to do business with. You can shoot them a message. Tell them QTR sent you. Tell them you want a discount. Tell them you want a free trial. Whatever will get you comfortable with checking out their product. They will make sure that you get whatever it is that you need, because we're tight like that. And Lucci, I think, will be on hopefully next week. I was just talking to him this morning. But we're definitely overdue to catch up with the man himself. Had a big September, too. Sang Lucci, I think, made $1 million in September. I saw his P&L. In the podcast description, you can get the link to the Steam Room and also the link to his 3LT playbook, which are the three rules that he uses to become a seven-figure trader. He's the real deal, Sang Lucci. This podcast also brought to you by my buddy Pete Hedges over at The Trader's Path. If you're looking for an investing community or a day trading community, check out my buddy over at The Trader's Path. Pete Hedges started The Trader's Path because he got tired of day trading communities where he felt like, hey, maybe he was being front run. Maybe they didn't really care about the members as much as they were saying, etc. And so Pete, being the honest guy he is, said, you know what, I'm going to start up my own shit. He took at least a couple of months. I had been talking to him before he launched his site. Put a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of resources into The Trader's Path so that he could create a community where they have a daily watch list, a daily live stream, investor education. Pete trades all kinds of markets, red markets, green markets, stocks, options. He's another guy. His contacts are in my podcast description. just reach out to Pete. Tell him you want a free trial. Tell him you heard about him on the QTR podcast. And he'll make sure you get whatever you need to get comfortable with checking out his product. No credit card, no nonsense, no bullshit. Pete will be good to you. His link is also in the podcast description. And he's a nice fucking guy, too. What do you think about that? This podcast also brought to you by my friends at Corvus Gold, my friends at Traders for a Cause, my favorite charity. Just had a great event with them, raised well over $100,000. I think it may have been over $200,000 at the end of the day for the Breast Cancer Research Fund. Thank you guys for allowing me to be a part of that with you. Ken R., Chris Bead, Nicholas Parks, Matthew Zimmer, my homeboy Jay Mintzmeyer, still in the house, Russ Valenti, Crichton Titus, some of my newest patrons this month, John Fiorella, The Grid, Carell, and Marcos M. Thank you so much for signing up. I had a couple people give me some love on PayPal. I don't have your names right now, but I do want to let you know I got that, and I appreciate it. Shane Yeakley, thank you. My friend David Swingle, some people that have been with me for a little bit longer on Patreon. GT is still with me. Anthony and Rusty Morrison still in the house. Thank you very much for your continued support, as well as Fat Tony is still here, and James Sparlin, thank you very much. This podcast is recommended to have a 3-drink minimum. Needs no explanation, especially heading into the election. Hopefully most of you guys are on a steady alcohol regimen to keep your mind limber, what with all the chaos that is breaking loose in the country. And finally, this podcast is definitely not investment advice. I'm not an investment advisor. I hold no registrations. I hold no licenses. I don't give financial advice. And you know, me or my guests, anything that we say, you should really just not listen to any of it at all. As a matter of fact, it's a great place to turn the podcast off right here. If you have any doubts, if you think, maybe I could listen and I might get swayed in one direction or the other, I'll give you a nice 5-second pause to turn the fucking thing off right here. Seeing no objections, why don't we get started with our podcast in that case? My friend Andy Scheckman is the president and owner of Miles Franklin Precious Metal Investments. Prior to starting Miles Franklin in 1989, he was a licensed financial planner specializing in Swiss franc investments and alternative investments. At Miles Franklin, a company that has eclipsed $5 billion in sales, Andy has developed an operation that maintains trust, collaboration, and ethical behavior, superior customer service, and satisfaction to better serve their clients. He's responsible for overseeing the firm's operations and business functions, etc., etc. The only thing you need to know is Andy blew the roof off of the podcast back in August when I had him on to talk about precious metals manipulation. And we red-pilled a couple of people back in August, Andy. I know I got some great feedback. Certainly, I loved talking to you, so I'm very happy to have you on right now. How the hell are you?
Likewise, Chris. I'm good, brother, and thanks for having me back. It's certainly been an interesting ride this year, 2020, and since we've talked, there's a lot that's come of age and a lot to talk about. So thanks for having me back. Good to be here, and hope you're doing well also.
Yeah, brother, I got to tell you, all things considered for 2020, I am hanging in there, and I feel like we get to 2021, I feel optimistic about next year. That's what I'll say. We get the election behind us. We get, you know, get the COVID vaccine out and the therapeutics and all this stuff. I think 2021 is going to be a better year. But listen, I wanted to pick your brain on a bunch of things. Obviously,
yes, sir.
First and foremost, we had that huge discussion back in August, and that was episode 215, if you haven't heard it, about gold and silver, which many of my listeners own. And, you know, since then, the metals markets have been relatively calm, but for trading kind of willy-nilly on these stimulus headlines that come out, as if the idea of a stimulus bill, which looks like it isn't going to happen until after the election now, as if that was the only bull case for gold and silver. And so the way that I see things heading into next year and really heading into the next couple years is, you know, the fact that we have bailouts of the states on the table as part of the stimulus check tells me that we're going down a slippery slope to monetization of all debt eventually. And then who knows, some kind of debt jubilee or whatever. And so I wanted to get your thoughts. Do you think the metals market is kind of being short-sighted here and just poking around over the day-to-day headlines?
Yeah, I do. I do, Chris. There's a term. It's not exactly the way Jim calls it, but Jim Sinclair, a friend of mine, coined a phrase. He called it MOPE, and management of perception economics is the way that I read it. And basically, you have misdirection is very pervasive. I did a lot of research on the book The Art of War. It was a book written in the 5th century by Sun Tzu, a Chinese military strategist. That this book is not only mandatory reading at West Point and the CIA, it's taught in every major business school in the world, especially in the United States, on corporate hierarchy. It's taught in every major law school on formulating arguments. And Bill Belichick, maybe arguably the best football coach ever, uses it to formulate game strategy. The whole premise of this book is misdirection. It's beating your opponent without throwing a punch. The media is a purveyor of misdirected rhetoric. The information that we hear out of the media is both bullshit and misdirected. Let me take you back to 2017 and lay down a foundation of events that has happened since 2017, and let your listeners decide for themselves if they're missing the boat or not. So, first of all, when we look at 2017, we see a period of time where in 17 and the years previous, the central banks of the world were indeed net sellers of precious metals. Could never understand why they were always selling their gold. And of course, that's what we talked about the last time was the reclassification of gold as a tier one asset. Remember,
Right.
prior to 2019, which we'll get to in a moment, gold was considered a tier three asset. And just real quickly, there were four reasons why the central banks were always selling it. It cost money to store, number one, paid no interest, number two, was unpredictable in its movement, number three, and the biggest reason was the tier three status, whereby only 50% of the value of the gold would have been calculated on a central bank balance sheet. So it would have, I think, incentivized central banks to sell gold and accumulate U.S. treasuries, which since Bretton Woods in 1944 was the only tier one asset on the planet, meaning a riskless asset. That's what a tier one asset is. If you Google it, central bank speak will tell you it is a riskless asset. So that tier three status, which would have knocked 50% of the balance off on top of cost to store, no interest, and excuse me, no clear direction on the movement of the market, would have incentivized people, central banks rather, to shed their gold. So if we look at 2017 and then work our way forward, I'll show you the things that have happened up till now, none of which are talked about by the media, who only gives us little bits and pieces to feed upon and on things like stimulus packages, which to me is nothing. It's just
Right.
amounts to absolutely nothing. But so let's go back. 2017, the first thing that we saw was the German Bundesbank repatriating their gold from the New York Federal Reserve. And they said something that I thought was really telling. In fact, they said in August of 2017, the German Bundesbank, in a press release, tellingly referred to 2020 as a hard and fast deadline to repatriate their gold. They used 2020. Shortly thereafter, we saw the Bank of Austria, the Dutch Central Bank, the Bank of Poland, the Bank of Hungary. They all started repatriating their gold, and many of them used statements publicly saying it was a plan to have their gold repatriated by 2020. The Dutch Central Bank, on its website in April of 2019, right after gold was reclassified in April of 2019 as the only other tier one asset on the planet, next to the U.S. Treasuries, a riskless asset, according to central banks. The Dutch National Bank said that gold plays a role in rebuilding a collapsed financial system. Gold is, they say, the anchor of trust for the financial system. If the system collapses, the gold stock can serve as a basis to build it up again. Gold bolsters confidence in the stability of the central bank's balance sheet and creates a sense of security. So that was literally days after the Bank of International Settlements, the central banker's central bank, reclassified gold as the only other tier one asset on the planet. Okay, so we got the central banks for 3 years before the reclassification bringing home their gold. We have the German bank saying, hey, 2020 is a fast and hard deadline to get it back. We have five or six other European banks do the same thing and say the same thing. We have the Dutch National Bank say that gold is the foundation of which a system rises from the ashes of a busted system. Okay, so there we are at 2019, and gold is now reclassified as the only other tier one status. If we take a look at what's happened this year, we see something really, really different and really, really interesting on the COMEX market. The COMEX market, the commodity exchange in which metals are traded, we've seen there are typically two categories of traders. There are the commercial banks and the speculators, and they normally beat the hell out of each other. Typically, it's the commercial banks suckering the speculators into large positions and then beating the hell out of them right before options expiration right. date. Typically, they will suck in the speculators, make it seem as though the market is gold friendly, and then punch them in the nose right at options expiration date. In fact, if you were to go and chart through the 90s and last decade, all of the times that gold expired worthless at options expiration, yet was way in the money in the days and weeks leading up to it, you would be shocked. I mean, it's so obvious. It's so blatant. It's ridiculous. Well, so we take a look at what has happened recently. There's this rise of a third group of people that is called others. Now, they're very clandestine, but I will tell you that others would be the wealthiest people in the world. They all trade on the Globex system. The Globex system, which is very private, is reserved for the wealthier and the wealthier and the wealthier. Now, these people, the others, I would tell you would be family offices, would be super high net worth individuals, and would be sovereign wealth funds, all of which view privacy as important as anything that they own in their asset quiver. I will tell you that all of them want to be off the radar screen. So they are classified on the COMEX as others. These others are now taking on the commercial banks. They have usurped or surpassed the relevancy, in my opinion, at least as far as what I'm getting at here, of the speculators, the hedge funds, as an example, right. let's call them. So what they have been doing on every delivery month in gold and silver, they are pulling off of the exchange these others who are standing for delivery regardless of the price. You see, the commercial banks used to naked short the hell out of the market. Naked short meaning selling something you don't own. But if you inflict enough pain on the price, everyone gives in. And you're a commercial bank with untold gazillions of dollars, a la J.P. Morgan just settling a $1 billion fine for spoofing the market, for manipulating the price. They spoof the hell out of it. They drive the price down, and everyone buckles, and the options expire worthless. But not the others. This year, the others, the sovereign wealth funds, the family offices, the super, super, super elite wealthy are saying, I don't care what the price does. Go ahead and make it short. I call. That's like playing mm-hmm. poker with your buddies who always go all in, and you know they're full of shit constantly, but you never call them because you don't want to risk your whole stack
right.
of chips.
And they got enough, until you they call got enough them. Firepower to do it. Right.
Of course. Until you call them and the face turns white.
Right.
And that's what the others are doing. They are calling the bluff of the commercial banks. And over the last several delivery months in 2020, we have seen more gold and silver pulled off per delivery month than we typically witness in a year. We're seeing it in a month. So now, on top of gold being reclassified and on top of all the central banks bringing their gold home from the Bank of England, or from the London Metals Exchange, or from the New York Fed, they're all taking it home, removing counterparty risk. We now seeing the others doing the same thing, taking it off the exchange, not allowing for it to be manipulated, not allowing due to the term of rehypothecation, which means me, you, and everyone else on the block owns the same asset, so we think, but we don't know that everyone else owns it. In other words, rehypothecation in the COMEX is, and this is very well known, that for every ounce of gold on the COMEX market, I don't know, 400 or 500 people lay claim to that 1 ounce. So if everyone runs to the door at the same time, 499 people get paper shafted, and the one lucky guy gets the golden ticket, just like in Willy Wonka. Everyone else gets paper settled. So rehypothecation is a very big problem, and they are removing that rehypothecation risk, that cash settlement or force majeure risk, before it becomes obvious. They are pulling metal off the exchange in copious quantities, as much as we would normally see in a year. So that's peg number two. Last week, the International Monetary Fund last week, which was more or less came into existence at Bretton Woods in 1944, which is a conglomerate of roughly 195 countries that go and make loans to underprivileged countries and indebting them for their life, came out and said, we want another Bretton Woods. So here you have the Bank of International Settlements reclassifying gold, and now the International Monetary Fund saying, we want a new Bretton Woods.
Right.
On top of the central banks and the high net worth people and the sovereign wealth funds pulling their money out.
Right.
So here's where it gets even crazier. Do you know every year the World Economic Forum meets, I believe it's in Davos, Switzerland?
Probably.
Do you know what the title of this year's meeting is by the chance?
Oh,
well, and they'll be meeting here in just a few weeks, by the way.
Let me see if I can just pull one out of my ass here. What is the title of a bunch of fucking rich deep staters meeting in Davos to talk about the ruins of the economic system?
Very close. You're getting close. You're warm.
I don't know. What is it? Burn it all to the ground.
The Great Reset.
Yeah, there you go. That was pretty close.
That is the title of the World Economic Forum's meeting in Switzerland.
Short the whole fucking thing, right?
Exactly. The Great Reset. And also, the Federal Reserve just issued two press releases just a couple of days ago about the large banks. One reads, agencies finalize rule to reduce the impact of large bank failures. And the others read, agencies issue final rule to strengthen resilience of large banks, as if they're preparing for a bank catastrophe.
Right.
So you put it all together, and what I see are the most powerful people in the world rewriting the rules, preparing for a reset, taking their metal off the exchange, reclassifying it as a tier one asset. All of these things are happening in a very accelerated manner. And the bottom line is simply this: the media will distract you through misdirection. Think of the no-look pass. Think of any game you've ever played with an opponent, whether it's checkers or chess, whether it's basketball, whether it's football, whatever. When you play a game with an opponent, the idea is to misdirect them.
Right.
The no-look pass in basketball, the fake handoff to the left where the whole line moves to the left except that one tight end sneaks out to the right flat wide open. It's misdirection. Whether it's chess and you send a pawn up one way so your queen can flank the other way. This is the art of financial war. We are in the midst of repositioning by the biggest monetary players on the planet, and they always are ahead of the curve. One last thing, and then I'll let you ask me another question. One thing that freaked me out a long time ago, when I was a financial advisor many, 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 many moons ago, you go to a class, it's like a 2 week long class, and they give you a book the size of a dictionary, and that book is about all the securities laws, and you go to class for a week or two, you study the book, and then you take your Series 7 exam, which allows you to be a stockbroker. Well, one thing that I was always shocked about was page one of this book. Page one of a book that they hand out to prospective stockbrokers was titled The Little Man Rule. And it basically says that the little man rule, and there was just one paragraph on this page, nothing else, basically says the little man rule always gets shafted because the little man moves after the big man positioned his or herself.
Right.
And I would argue, hang on, I'm sorry about that. I'm going to shut my door and get my dogs out of here.
That's okay. So, that's a running theme on my podcast, guests and their dogs.
Know, working from home these days has its own challenges, and I got a couple little yappers that continue to interrupt me when I'm talking to nice people like you anyways. So the bottom line is that you have a system that is changing right out from underneath us, and the big money is repositioning. The banks are bringing are de-dollarizing.
Right.
The big players are taking their money off the exchanges.
The yuan's going digital. They just said yesterday.
Just did. So did Sweden. Right. So you're seeing a digital footprint. Now, I'd like to talk to you about that because I have some feelings on that as well. But the bottom line is, the little man rule is in effect. The little man is looking at the wrong thing. They're looking at things like stimulus. Why isn't the price moving? They ignore the fact that gold is up 60-70% this year. They ignore the fact that silver has doubled since March, and they don't see the forest for the trees. This is classic misdirection. And the big money, those who are trying to reposition themselves, are doing so by maintaining the rhetoric that supports their ability to do so. They don't want to tell the world that, yeah, by the way, we reclassify gold. And yeah, by the way, the IMF just asked for a new Bretton Woods. And all of these relevant topics you don't hear anywhere. You got to dig to find it. Go to the IMF's website. It's front and center. Go to the Bank of International Settlements website. It's front and center so that they can tell us after they screw us and reposition themselves ahead of everybody else, the big man. They can look the little man in the face and say, well, we told you. We're public about it, right? Well, just so happens that every newspaper, radio station, TV station, magazine across the United States is owned by four or five companies. That information, including Fox, is given to us in a manner that allows the big money to reposition ahead of the little guy. And so I would argue, yes, we are at the precipice of a massive change, Chris, and I think it's only going to get crazier as that realization becomes stark after the big man has positioned themselves largely ahead of the crowd. And that's what I see happening from the top on down. So, yeah, if you'd like to talk about digital currencies and whatever, I got a take on that too.
Well, I think everything that you just said makes sense because it's just common sense that we're going to have to be headed. I mean, I didn't know half of the things that you just brought up, especially having to do with the big boys, you know, and the Globex trading and all those things. And I know that you have visibility into those things that I don't, and I'm not surprised at all to hear anything that you just said, because to me, as an outside observer and a truth seeker and a guy that's trying to position myself in the best way possible for the inevitable, it is clear that this needs to happen at some point. And so I am going back to my question about, oh, you know, is the price of gold just being short-sighted? You know, I'm more than happy to take the very, very, very long view when it comes to precious metals. And I don't even think it needs to be a 30, 50, 100-year view. I think, you know, I think a 10-year view at this point is a long view, because I think all these things that you're talking about, we're heading towards them at an accelerating rate. I mean, we've gone, you know, we went from QE2 to QE3 faster, or QE4 from QE3 to QE4 faster than we went from QE2 to QE3. We're moving, you know, the stimulus has to be exponentially more. The options for debt monetization build up and become more and more on the table until eventually we head towards this terminus. And then the question is, well, right, well, what happens after, you know, they napalm the whole thing? And that is, that's something I've been talking about for years, and something that, you know, I want to get ahead of. And you know, it's about questioning the answers we're given. With the media, I got a question for you. Do you think the media's not touching this topic is, A, because it could really induce some major civil unrest and blow the heads off some people? Or do you think the media is kind of ignorant to it? Because there are a lot of dumb fucking people in the financial media.
Neither. Look at what's happened to all your brethren on YouTube. They're all getting their channels stripped because they dare talk about Hunter Biden receiving millions of dollars illicitly from the Ukraine.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Well, that's the fact that the people who control the information don't want people like you telling the truth. Even my friend Sarah Westhall got her SGT report. They got their Patreon channels yanked. I mean, come on. This is ridiculous. So the information that is being disseminated to the public, it's less to me about forestalling a craziness or panic, and more so allowing the agenda to facilitate, and then the information will be given to the public after the right. big man has position. This is a high stakes game for World Reserve, and I do believe that if the information were allowed to be disseminated fairly, it would crowd out the big boy and girls' chances of positioning themselves properly ahead of the crowd. There's something called, as an example, the Cantillon effect, which is when you talk about money creation, it says whoever's closest to the fire hydrant when the money is coming out gets the greatest benefit. Because if you look at it as being highly inflationary, the people closest to the Federal Reserve get to access that money fastest,
right,
and buy things before inflation takes hold as that money trickles on down to the public. The Cantillon effect is exactly part of the reason here. They need to position themselves and buy their assets and do the things they need to do before massive inflation takes off, which leads me to, I would like to mention why I think we're going to see a digital currency. There are several reasons. When you see China and Sweden doing it, it becomes closer and closer and closer to reality. When you see Nancy Pelosi, the scary woman, talk about it in March for her House Subcommittee Finance bill, it was voted down, but I knew at that moment it was reality. We look at gold and I say gold will take will be part of a new digital currency. Maybe not at first. I think if the Chinese beat us to the punch, it will be. And that is, they will peg it to gold, maybe 10% of every new currency unit, Fed dollar or yuan, digital, whatever, will have a gold backing to it, with custody of said gold located immutably on a distributed ledger. So you can actually validate. Now, I don't know who, we haven't talked about who will audit said gold, but we will simply say that the gold will be on a distributed ledger to give the currency veracity. But here's one of the reasons that people aren't talking about, whereby we will see a digital currency soon, I believe. It is less for the fact that they'll tell us that COVID can live on paper currency. That's bullshit. That's not the reason why. The reason why is in one word, and it is velocity. You mentioned something a minute ago about QE. And I would argue, you're right, the Fed has no choice but to QE to infinity, to continue to buy assets to keep asset prices high. But let's talk about what the Fed can and can't do. The Fed has two tools in its power. Tool number one is the federal funds rate. Well, they can keep interest rates low and buy the back end of the bond market to keep interest rates low. They do that by their second tool, and that is asset prices. Traditionally, or assets rather, under the balance sheet, traditionally they were only allowed to buy Fannie and Freddie and U.S. Treasuries, things that were backed specifically by the U.S. government. But this year they melded with the Treasury, and using BlackRock as a intermediary, this massive fund, if you will, that's more or less an extension of the government, they are buying up assets. They are buying up stocks, common stocks. They're buying up junk and corporate bonds, things that they were never allowed to do. They are doing so to keep asset prices high, right? So they want asset prices high and interest rates low, but they also want inflation. Inflation is how you monetize, so to speak, the debt. You make paying off the debt a whole hell of a lot easier in inflated dollars than you do in real dollars. So what do? They try to get inflation through quantitative easing. What is quantitative easing? Quantitative easing is, let's pretend, Chris, you are Bank of America and I am the Federal Reserve. So Chris, I come to you and say, I'm gonna buy $5 billion worth of bonds off of your balance sheet that you own, And you say, okay, Federal Reserve, here are the $5 billion in U.S. Treasuries bonds. So now I own those bonds. I'm the Federal Reserve. But in paying you, Chris, for the $5 billion, you don't get that money. In fact, that money goes to an account in Chris's name here at the Federal Reserve. But the only way Chris can access said funds is to make loans. And when you make a loan for a new property or a new car or for a home equity loan or whatever it may be, that creates money. Money creation is lent into existence, period. The Federal Reserve cannot lend money or create inflation on their own. They can buy assets and make asset prices inflated. They can lower interest rates and make the real estate market and the stock market inflated due to easy money and lack of fixed income alternatives, but they cannot create broad inflation in and of themselves without cooperation from the commercial banks. The commercial banks need to loan and lend, and the public needs to get out there and borrow money from the banks. But we'll go back to September of last year and the repo market problems that we had talked about, where the banks' balance sheets were crumbling. And again, this was due to rehypothecation of treasuries as collateral. The term rehypothecation keeps coming over and over and over again, and that is where the same asset is sold over and over again to multiple people without their knowledge. It is a shell game. It is a Ponzi scheme. So the banks started to not trust one another. The balance sheets were horrible, and they're pulling out the overnight repo market since September. So if we take a look at now, these same banks who are flush with liquidity from the Fed do not want to make loans. In fact, they want to do the opposite of that. They want to shore up their balance sheet, because not only was it in dire straits in September from the repo market, but all of the loans that these banks have made, you, Bank of America, to half of the companies across the globe that are either dead or dying or hanging on by a thread, your balance sheet sucks. So you don't want to take on more risk and make more loans. Instead, you want to do the opposite. But that pisses off me, the Federal Reserve. I don't like that. I want inflation. If you're not going to play game or play ball with me, what am I going to do? I'm going to go to Congress and lobby for a new digital Fed coin, right? Because now,
with a time limit on it, right?
With a time limit on it. That's exactly right. There's your velocity. Fed coin means I usurp you, the commercial bank, and the money goes directly into John Q. Public's Fed wallet. And if you really want, like you just said, if you really want inflation and you really want velocity, let's say November 1st, everyone gets $5,000 in their new Fed wallet that expires Christmas Day if not used immediately. Now you spur the economy, you create inflation, you create velocity right into modern monetary theory, and you have just rewritten 300 years worth of money creation in this country, and you have turned it on its head, and all of a sudden you are sowing the seeds for hyperinflation under the guise of protection from the coronavirus, just like all the other bullshit that we've seen this year, where everything has been done, like blowing up the entire worldwide Keynesian system with no one to blame but a virus. And so I think that the bottom line is, Chris, is that we are on the precipice of some very, very, very scary things. And when we talk about gold and silver, let me just say one thing. I don't care what the price is. To me, gold and silver is wealth, or our wealth, have been so for 6,000 years, have lived through every pandemic, every market collapse, every new currency system, every hyperinflation, every Great Depression, and every world war, and still is immutable in its value. So yes, the information that we are getting about prices lagging and due to no stimulus or whatever, that's all noise. That is the no look pass. That is misdirection. Look at what the big players are doing, from the central banks to the commercial banks to the sovereign wealth funds to all of the entities and the Bank of International Settlements. They are telling you what they're going to do. The media, who we all listen to as the final word, they're not telling us squat. And if all we do, like my sister is one of the smartest human beings I've ever met in my life. She's incredibly well-read. She just reads the wrong stuff. And so I don't even try to talk to her about this stuff because she's very well read by reading the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and USA Today, and she can tell you all about politics and all about this stuff, but she will never understand where I'm coming from because the information she is reading is completely biased. And that's the key here, is that God bless someone like you, Chris, who takes time and effort to get out there and say the real things, to say, show what's happening, to give people like myself and others, I love your show, who you give people the opportunity to speak the truth. And it's so telling to me when you see others like you who have crossed one little line about talking about Hunter Biden on their shows and are now stripped from YouTube and stripped from Patreon because they are trying to exert their First Amendment rights. And I'll tell you something, the fact that this happens is terrifying. What happened to journalistic integrity? What happened to the ability to say your viewpoint a la the First Amendment? These things, if the Democratic Party gets into office, will be a memory.
Yeah, they'll be a distant memory.
They'll get rid of the Second Amendment. They'll get rid of the First Amendment. They'll pack the Supreme Court. They'll call a constitutional convention. Everything that was dear to this country will be a distant memory. Capitalism will be phased out in favor of socialism and all of the things that have made America wonderful. You know, it's not about equality. It's about equal opportunity. And this country has given everyone, even someone like me, equal opportunity. My family came from nothing, Chris. My parents were told to file bankruptcy when I was in high school. My dad took a job with another precious metals company in 1983 out of desperation, had no money, nothing, and built a career, he and I, in 1990, starting Miles Franklin from nothing. My dad's middle name is Miles. His best friend who loaned us $60,000 in 1989 to start this company's middle name was Franklin. On top of my parents selling their life insurance policies, we borrowed $60,000 from my dad's oldest friend. And just recently, we eclipsed $6 billion in sales without a customer complaint. We are the embodiment of the American dream, of capitalism, of doing things the right way without pissing anyone off, without stealing from anyone. We have built a business through hard work and integrity. And these kinds of opportunities will be stripped from us if we're not careful. And we are on the verge of that happening. So to me, gold and silver are neither an investment as much as they are liberation, freedom, and wealth. And that's exactly what I view gold and silver at. And I hope your listeners would look at them the same way as well.
Yeah, and I think everything you said about equality of opportunity is so important, right? You know, my parents, both just high school educations, my mom later went and got an associate's degree later on in life after I was born and, you know, everything was settled and situated. But, you know, my father was a mailman. My mom worked at the local library. You know, I came from a very modest upbringing. And just from doing the right thing for years and years and years, back when the laws of economics actually existed, right? And there was interest on savings and things like that. You know, my parents were able to provide a good life for me and a good life for themselves, you know? And so I was just reading this story this morning. This guy I follow on Instagram, who's a friend of a friend, his name is El Patron. He sells cars out in Brooklyn. I think he used to work for Brooklyn Mitsubishi, but he's like a high school dropout. The guy, you know, he had a bad alcohol problem. I think he was in jail at one point. And I follow his feed because it's very motivational. I think he runs like several car dealerships now. He does billions of dollars a year in sales. And he's got this positive mindset. And, you know, he posts every day to Instagram about, you know, just going after your opportunities. His family's from, he came here from El Salvador when he was 15, I think I saw in the post this morning. And so the opportunity is there. You just got to fucking grind for it, man. My buddy Evan Robinson, I just had on this podcast two episodes ago, was in jail for 20 years. Got out of jail, turned his life around. You know, he's a felon. He got put in jail for armed robbery. Came out of jail, got a loan from Wells Fargo, okay? Got a loan from Wells Fargo, built up his credit score, started a business, and now is a successful business owner in his love and life. So it's possible, all right? And the loss of that equality of opportunity, I think, would be devastating to the country and everything the country stands for. Now,
end of the world, Chris. End of the world. We are the engine of growth and hope and light in the rest of the world. You're right. And you know, God forbid that happens, man. And it'll be a very sad time. for our children to grow up in if that type of opportunity goes by the wayside and the socialistic agenda and philosophies are embraced. It's very frightening to me. In fact, more frightening than just about anything else.
Well, there's a parallel I want to draw between the two things you brought up. One was the censorship of the Hunter Biden story, and the other thing was questioning the entire global economic system, like the theory behind it, the ideology behind it, not just as it exists within the Keynesian bubble. And the parallel is that at some point relatively soon, confidence is going to start to wane in the media, and I think confidence is going to start to wane in the global financial system. And what that's going to do is it's going to start to raise some very interesting existential questions, some of which we're already kind of starting to see. You know, I give the Bitcoin crowd credit because they bring up a lot of these. But, you know, why are we paying taxes if we can just print money? Oh, there's an interesting question. You know, when you rewrite the laws of economics and the reason that we have taxes to generate, you know, revenue for our respective governments to spend, when that goes out the window, okay, well, what happens to the laws of economics there? When you have all these independent content creators that eventually are going to break through, the internet's not going to be able to censor everybody, okay? But when you have these independent content creators and the world's starting to realize that we're not getting the whole story, there's going to be a lot of other existential questions asked. I want to ask you specific to the Hunter Biden story, because there was audio that came out today, which was wild sounding. Do you think there would be a breaking point in that story with, I don't know, 6 days until the election, 7 days until the election, where the mainstream media was forced to cover it? Or is this a full court press to shut that story down no matter what? If they had him on videotape taking, you know, a sack of money with a dollar sign on it from, you know, President Xi himself or something crazy, could that story hit a level of insane where they would have to cover it or no?
No, it would just be Russian disinformation. And I'll tell you something. I find that whole topic more frightening than any single thing that I see around me. The fact that the media is being controlled by an entity or entities that is misdirecting us into a narrative that is completely BS. The fact that they were all over Trump since day one about every single thing and was guilty until proven innocent, and they don't even acknowledge. I mean, all you got to do is turn on Fox News for 10 minutes and you will see the reality of what these Hunter Biden tapes are all about. And the fact that they completely ignore it and brush it under the rug is really, really, really frightening to me. On top of trying to shut down the independent media, the YouTubers, and Patreon, this is not America. I would think, yes, under normal circumstances, let me put it this way. If it were Trump and he got caught stealing a candy bar from his own gift shop at Mar-a-Lago, it would be front page news. Trump's a thief. But he owns the damn hotel, let alone a guy like Biden, Hunter Biden, taking millions of dollars and his father claiming that he never heard about it, but being center stage to every part of it. It's just a complete and total sham. And our media and the journalistic integrity that goes along with it should all be ashamed of themselves. I do completely mean that. And at this point, I've given up hope that the media will portray anything other than this democratic socialist agenda as being anything other than a scam. And, you know, no, I don't think they will. And that is the part that frightens me. And that is the part that makes me think, well, hey, you know, maybe Biden has a chance. And because people are misinformed. And even when Fox did a roundup, so to speak, the other night and had a room filled of Democrats and Republicans, when the Democrats were asked after seeing snippets of this, you know, are you swayed? And they would say, no, we're not swayed. It's all, you know, it's unproven, it's unvalidated, it's unverified. Yet everything that Trump has ever done has been verified before it was verified,
right,
has been validated before it was validated. It's really very, very disconcerting. And that's why I love guys like you, man, who are trying to get information out there, fighting with one hand behind your back, Big Brother, who is, no question about it, monitoring and mitigating what is said or what is acceptable to say in, you know, the Socialist Republic of the United States. It's really disconcerting, Chris, and God bless you for doing what you're doing. I hope you'll continue to do it, and I hope the American people are wise enough, God willing, to know that this ain't right. This doesn't smell right. And with it, if it doesn't smell right now, what happens when President Harris gets, I'm sorry, President Biden. It's funny, there are signs all around my neighborhood, those that have Joe Biden signs. There's this one sign that I keep seeing over and over and over again. It's Harris in giant letters and Biden in little itty bitty letters underneath it. You know, so I think that it's bad enough that we would get someone in office that is borderline senile. It would be far worse to get someone who is borderline socialist in and taking over for Biden if things were to go, I think, according to script. So I just think these are very scary times. And as much as I wish Trump would be slightly more presidential so he wouldn't infuriate people in the middle, I think he's our only hope right now, our only hope of pulling ourselves up out of this mess without without rewriting, if you will, the whole American way of life. And I think that's coming if the Democrats, and God forbid they take the Senate and the House and the presidency, we are heading for a whole new America, one that you and I will not recognize. I grew up in the 70s and the 80s. I think my children have a far less, a worse existence. Forget about COVID, just growing up in the digital age, everything is changing. Everything is changing from what once was and what we remember. And I think what once was and what we remember will be a distant memory if indeed the Democrats sweep the election, the House and the Senate. It's very frightening. And I think people need to wake up to this. And the question they should be asking themselves is not how much gold and silver should I own, but what exposure do I want to a currency that is dying, right, and a system that is dying, and all of the elite positioning themselves opposite that system. Do you know how long ago a trillion seconds was, by the way, Chris? Anyone ever asked you that question?
I think you mentioned it on the last podcast, but I can't remember. I think I was drinking brandy.
31,688 years ago. We have a $4 trillion deficit right now. That our national debt is increasing by like $60,000 a second.
Yeah.
The numbers are so massive, so big. We're in so much trouble that to go away from our capitalistic history of price discovery, of interest rates finding their own place due to the market, not to the Federal Reserve and the manipulation, we're in big trouble. And I think we need to go back to our roots. And the only person who has any hope of that happening is Trump. So for those listening who are undecided, put your political affiliation away for a moment and put on your American hat. And if you want America to be anything like what it once was or what it stands for, a vote for anyone other than Trump is a spit in the face of what America stands for. Regardless of how you feel about Trump, regardless if you feel he's a buffoon in the things that he says, his actions,
his policy,
and what he stands,
right,
yes, his policy and his actions are what he should be measured against. And his policy and his actions have been fantastic. As far as I'm concerned, I just think that he's his own worst enemy, and I really am undecided. I'll tell you one thing that frightened me. Goldman Sachs came out just the other day and said they're calling for $50 silver because they think Biden's new green plan will really, really call for lots of silver in terms of
solar panels,
and other things. Yep. And so they actually came out and said if Biden wins, silver goes much higher, but they made it seem as though they thought he would win. I hope he doesn't, but nonetheless, if he does, you will wish that you had gold and silver, because I would say December, the markets will collapse if he wins. You have markets at all-time highs, at the highest price-to-earnings ratio we've ever seen, with 40 million people unemployed. And even the most ardent stock bulls, Chris, would have to say that what's happening on Main Street, being completely detached from Wall Street, doesn't make sense. And I think if they were to realize this in the light of capital gains taxes going way up and corporate taxes going way up, and an economy that's all but dead and a stock market at all-time highs, they would be foolish not to sell into much higher capital gains in January. The market will collapse. And if Trump wins, I live in the epicenter of complete stupidity in Minnesota. And if Trump wins, I'm sure I'll be sleeping with my AR-15 in my bed, as you will see pitchforks and burning and looting, just like we saw this summer. I think December is going to be a really scary month in this country, regardless of who wins. Either way, it's going to be a month to remember, if I had to guess.
Well, going back to the discussion before about policy versus personality, I put out a Twitter poll a couple of days ago asking, like, hey, what do you vote for? Do you vote for policy more or do you vote for personality more? And I think 85-something percent people that responded, several thousand people responded. Granted, I have a libertarian conservative bias, I'm sure, in my followers. But, you know, 85% of them say, okay, we vote on policy. And then I put up another one basically trying to gauge whether anybody changes their mind based on political ads. And nobody really came to with that. But look, there's a lot of things that I don't agree with Trump on, okay? I don't necessarily agree with some of his social policies. I don't necessarily agree with how he handled the pandemic at first. And I was very critical of him in February and in March. And I said back then, I said I thought it would cost him the presidency the way that he handled the coronavirus at first. Certainly some of the remarks that he's on tape making are things that I think I hold myself to a higher standard than to say things like that, even amongst my guy friends. So there's certain things that I'm at odds with him on, but at the end of
that's what I'm getting at. Yeah, totally. Exactly.
At the end of the day, though, at the end of the day, you know, a vote for Trump is going to be a vote for lower taxes. It's going to be a vote for less regulation. It's going to be a vote that upholds the Constitution far more than a vote on the left. It is. So I think it will do severely less damage to the country to vote for Trump than it would for somebody like Biden, who I think really, I think within 18 months, Biden's out and Harris is in. And that scares the shit out of me because she comes off not only as clueless and not only as beholden to some of these other imbeciles in the Senate who really, you know, they read a couple of they read Marx in college and now think that they know how an economy should function. Those people, and she's beholden to those people, and she also comes off as very malleable, and that, you know, even more so than Clinton. Hillary came off as very formulaic and very, very much like she would pander to kind of do whatever she thought would get her the most favorability that day. And Harris gives me that same kind of inauthentic vibe. And I think that's very scary because I think that's a road towards real fundamental ideological changes to the country as a whole versus Trump, who, you know, if I got to listen to him talk shit about something that he doesn't know about, which I've listened to him do for 4 years, you know, I know the guy talks some shit. He fucking runs his mouth. He, you know, he's obscene sometimes, whatever. But at the end of the day, you know, he's voting.
Gets the job done.
Yeah, he's voting to protect my Second Amendment right. I want to be able to bear arms. He's a vote for law and order. That's another big thing right now in the country, okay? So you mentioned if he gets elected, all hell will break loose. But yeah, he'll be in office, though. So that will give me some degree of confidence because at least that will embolden law enforcement to do their job. Could you imagine if Biden gets into office and then we wind up having riots anyway just for the hell of it? And then all of a sudden, you know, we have law enforcement around the country. And I'm not Mr. Big Yay law enforcement either. I've had some bad experiences with law enforcement in my life. But at the end of the day, in my neighborhood, when something goes wrong, I fucking pick up the phone, call the police, you know?
Of course.
If somebody's not in my house, I hear a loud bang somewhere, I hear a car crash, I see something fucking weird in the sky that happened a couple nights ago, no fucking idea what it was, I call the police. And they come out and dutifully respond, and, you know, they're happy to have a task and something to work on, and, you know, but yeah, I think at the end of the day, you have to vote to maintain some order. Otherwise, nothing is going to get done. We could devolve into total chaos, and I don't want to sound like a fearmonger, and maybe I'm just getting old, Andy, but that certainly seems like it's on the table, doesn't it?
No, it's completely and totally realistic. And it isn't being there. Look, there's a fine line between pessimism and realism, between conspiracy and reality. These are all really fine lines that have been blurred, and I don't think you're wrong at all. I think you're exactly right, and I think that, yeah, you know, how about instead of abolishing the police, how about just being held to a higher standard, greater penalties for doing right. dumb things? I mean, it's to cast a negative shadow on the whole thing is ridiculous. I drive through parts of Minneapolis or walk through parts of downtown Minneapolis. There is an area called Nicollet Mall in the middle of downtown Minneapolis that normally 12 months out of the year, even in the middle of the winter, is filled with business people, food trucks, and farmers market. You go out on Nicollet Mall at 11 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday afternoon, I don't care what month it is, you'll find 20 food trucks. You'll find people milling about who are working in downtown Minneapolis. Right now, there is 8% occupancy in those buildings in downtown Minneapolis. They are all either the ones that are not high-rises, are either looted, burned down, boarded up. The food trucks are gone. The farmers market is gone. The shops along the mall are gone. There is nothing there but homeless, drug users, no cops, no business people, no nothing. I went down there not too long ago, beginning of September, with one of my best friends, who's also my attorney, has an office on Nicollet Mall. We went for a 6-block walk down the mall. Normally, I would have hit 12 food trucks by the time I got a block, not a truck. And by the time we got 6 blocks, he looked at me and said, "We need to get the hell out of here." He says, "If someone jumps us, no one's going to help us." And there was nothing but hoodlums everywhere around us. It was so crazy, Chris. It was so surreal. This was a place I used to be very proud of. Now it's a place I'm looking to leave. And if we continue down this path of vilifying the police, of vilifying law and order, of vilifying equal opportunity in a capitalistic country where dreams come true, even ones like mine, where my parents were told to file bankruptcy in 1982. And from that, we built a company that has eclipsed $6 billion in sales. That is what opportunity is. That's what hard work is. That's what capitalism is. And playing by the rules and respecting law and order, these are things that has allowed this country to flourish. And all of these nitwits who are embracing this other agenda will be very sad when they look back through the history books someday to see that we were once what we stood for. The United States was the greatest idea ever, and we are moving perilously close to that idea being nothing other than a distant memory. And I think people should wake up to that and vote for policy, not for personality. Yeah, he's a buffoon. So what? He gets the job done and he embraces what America is about, law and order and opportunity and capitalism, the things that make this country great. And I really, really hope to high heaven that he has another 4 years to show that to the rest of the world. But in the meantime, what can the people do? Well, I think leaving your money in dollars that is being destroyed by the Federal Reserve, they're going to attempt to digitize it and inflate it away, that is being dishoarded by the central and commercial banks. I think the worst thing they can do is be in dollars and dollar assets, in stocks and bonds that are in a bubble and an Uber bubble. The stocks are at all-time highs in every metric, with half of the country unemployed. And the bond market at the tail end of a 25-year bull market, with interest rates approaching zero, chasing yield in that environment is a fool's errand. Not to mention those bonds issued by an all but insolvent entity, the U.S. government, running high levels of inflation 2 to 3 to 4 times what the interest rate is, right, if not more. So the bond market is in the biggest bubble of all. Where do you put your money safely? Not as an investment, but as wealth, wealth that has outlived German hyperinflation, the Great Depression, pandemics, world wars. That's gold and silver. It's wealth. And the central banks and the commercial banks of the world are telling you quietly through their actions and through their policy that this is going to be a road or a central piece of what paves the road to the next system. And I think that's inevitable. There will be a new system. The question is, how does it play out? Is it violent? Is it smooth? I don't know. But I'll tell you that I would certainly put my chips on the side of 5,000, 6,000-year-old history, that being precious metals, rather than just about anything else, especially putting our trust in the government, who is misdirecting us on every single way, starting with the information that they're allowing to filter its way down to the public.
Yeah, and obviously, I mean, you run a gold business, and I own gold and silver, so we have a vested interest in that regard. But, I mean, just for clarification for the listeners, I mean, you and I have never talked politics before. I don't know if we did on the last podcast, but we haven't talked to each other since the last podcast, so we've definitely haven't talked politics.
Never.
We're just ending up on the same side of the coin here.
Well, I'd like to say one thing. You know, often I'll read the comments, and you get some dipshit who will say, oh, he's just talking his book.
Right.
Let me put it to you this way. I went to, with aspirations of playing baseball, the University of Minnesota in 1988, before I tore my anterior cruciate ligament in a basketball game. Dumbest thing I ever did. That ended my aspiration of being a baseball player. I started with my father, 19 years old, started Miles Franklin, 1989. And he said to me, Andy, there'll be one rule only, or I'll fire you. I said, well, shit, I can deal with that, Dad. One rule? What's the one rule? He says, you will buy something every 2 weeks, or I'll fire you. I said, that's the only rule? I'm in. For 30 years, I'm the president and owner of the company. He ain't going to fire me any longer. But I've honored my promise to him, Chris, and for 30 years, every 2 weeks, I have never missed a two-week period, ever. And I have bought something, whether it be 1 ounce of silver or 50 ounces of gold or anything in between. I have bought something every 2 weeks for 30 years. I do not view metal as an investment. It is wealth. It is 100% wealth to me. And I think that's the way to look at it. And now we are beginning to see, when you see a reclassification of gold, when you see the central banks buying it, when you see the wealthy pulling it off the exchanges, when you see a call by the IMF for a new Bretton Woods, this is exactly where we are heading, to a new system that I believe will have a central role, with precious metals involved as a central role, rather, and everything else is just speculation to me. So, I think that, no, we haven't talked, but I would like to say I don't talk my book. I don't care if people don't believe that or not. I mean, I guess I do, but I don't, in the respect that I had a company come into my office not too long ago who wanted to buy my company. And even though I turned them down and I did not sell my company, I asked myself, what would I do if I had $20 million right now? Where would I put my money?
Put it all back in gold?
I would. That's what I came back to. I mean, where are you going to put it? Stocks at all-time highs? Bonds at all-time highs? Real estate at all-time highs? When an economy does not support any of the three, no, I'd put it into wealth. And so, no, I'm not talking my own book. I am 100% objective. And people who are not objective will be business failures.
Right.
You must be objective. You must put yourself in the other person's shoes. And when I look at where I would tell my best friend, my children, my family, or my clients, it's the same thing. It's protection from what's coming next. And the only thing that has lasted as wealth since the dawn of civilization. Not only that, we are perilously close to having a new currency. I think it'll be, I don't know, sometime between now and the end of next year, there'll be a new digital currency. The dollars that we call money will be hanging from a frame in the Smithsonian. It is time to realize that things are changing rapidly. And either you get rolled by change or you roll with it. And the way to roll with it is to do what the big boys and girls are doing, and that is positioning themselves in a tier one asset, gold. Now, when I say gold, I mean silver too. Silver was not reclassified, but there's a 90% correlation throughout all of history between the two. As one goes, so does the other. When we look at the last five bull markets in gold and silver, we see gold moving first every time and silver moving faster and further after the fact. It lags and then it outperforms. Silver will move, I believe, not in a linear fashion. It'll move up kind of chaos theory fashion, like we saw in July, where it moved up $10 or $11 in a matter of days, over 50% in a matter of days. And I think you will see that again in both gold and silver. It will be accumulated in mass once the realization becomes stark. And I think you will see that. And it won't be linear and it won't be orderly. It'll be more chaos. So for your listeners out there who are thinking, well, should I wait? Should I buy it now? Should I wait? I would simply say this, that I'd cost average if you're debating. That's the only way to smooth out the uncertainty, because two things will happen. One, if the price goes down, all the people who have been sitting on the sidelines will jump in. And just like we saw in March, when silver was smashed down to $12 an ounce or $11.80, you couldn't find an ounce of silver for under $20 anywhere in the country.
That's right. Yeah.
To get it.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so that's not the proper way to do it. Premiums will increase exponentially and delivery delays will as well. And if the price starts to really rise, well, I think you'll see very quickly, not only the investors like Warren Buffett, who put 2.5% of Berkshire Hathaway into American Barrick, largest gold mining company, or the Ohio Police and Fire Pension, who put 5% of a $12 billion fund into gold and silver, or all the big hedge fund guys like Stanley Druckenmiller and all the others who are saying that the markets are going to crash, you need to own gold and silver. These people have put a toe in the water, a toe amounting to a rounding error. When that toe becomes a foot, an ankle, a knee, into the waist, and all in, very quickly, there'll be nothing left. And in the case of silver, you have a commodity that is wholeheartedly unique to others. It is the only commodity, to my knowledge, really. I mean, you could argue platinum is kind of this way too, and palladium, but really, the only real asset that has a long history as a monetary instrument, but also a vital industrial element. It's bracketed on either side between copper and gold, gold being a monetary metal and copper an industrial. Well, silver's both. And so as one side of silver's demand equation goes higher, whether it be industrial or investment, it will push the other one up. And I would argue that as investors start buying it because gold gets too expensive, really start buying it, like the hedge funds, like the pension funds, and there are thousands of pension funds with $12 billion in them, just like the Ohio Police and Fire Pension, thousands of them who as a group are only 0.5% invested in gold and silver. That's nothing. When that becomes 1 or 2%, a 2% allocation by the world's hedge funds and pension funds would be a fourfold increase. There'd be nothing left overnight. And so when that happens, the industrials will have a spiritual experience, and they will jump in with both feet, because if you need silver to make solar panels or electronics in a digital world, you have to have it. Even if it's only 0.1% of an ounce to make an iPhone, you have to have it. So what do? They'll buy tens of thousands of ounces, just like Ford Motor Company did when they bought palladium in the late 90s because platinum was getting too expensive for catalyst converters and drove the price way, way high. You will see all of these industrials secure future production and gobble up as much silver as they can, which already amounts to almost 70% of all the silver mined each year goes to industrial uses. So you will see the industrials ignite a fuse under the price of silver and demolish the available supply for the investors, who will then scurry to get as much as they can. They'll feed upon each other. Silver, to me, Chris, is the best investment out there. It offers very unique potential. It has an industrial component that lights that increases that potential and will be tied to gold on a 90% historical correlation, which is now going to be, according to the central banks, a tier one asset, a riskless asset being accumulated by the most powerful players on the planet. Just the other day, Andrew McGuire, in an interview with Arcadia Economics, my friend Chris Marcus, said for the first time in his career, now Andrew McGuire is a big major precious metals wholesaler in London. He said for the first time in his career, he is being told that they cannot get the allocations they want in 1,000-ounce silver bars because the Chinese are going into all of the refineries in Switzerland taking as much silver as they can. They've always been gold buyers. Now they're buying silver. This will be the beginning of lighting that fuse of massive appreciation in silver. And then you get the industrials who say, "Whoa, better secure our position." And that's why you could see silver move up, certainly not in a linear fashion, but when we see it move up many dollars per day, I think we will see that just like we saw in July, in spades. So silver to me is where your people should be putting money, gold as well, but silver is the real, I think,
You're gonna see some serious shit, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it is. And again, one last thing about silver. I would argue when the ratio that we have now, roughly 80-1, gets back into whack.
Yeah.
Keith Neumeyer, I'm going to be doing an interview with Keith Neumeyer, the CEO of First Majestic Silver, tomorrow. I'm going to ask him publicly, because he's told me personally that what they pull out of the ground right now is 6-1.
Yeah.
The ratio right now is roughly 80-1. What he is basically saying is that the ratio is totally out of whack. We dig and dig and dig and dig and dig, and all we get is 6 ounces of silver for every ounce of gold. Silver is a depleted asset. When that ratio snaps back, which I think it will, then you trade into gold. When you can trade 10 ounces of silver for 1 ounce of gold, if you traded your gold right now and got 80 ounces of silver, roughly, for every ounce of gold, when it snaps, like it will, into the, let's even call it 20-1, you trade back into gold, you end up getting 4 ounces of gold for every one you traded. The last time we saw this was 2010. We had 85-1. I begged everyone to switch, just like I did earlier this year in March when it was 120-1. The greatest disparity in human history. 85-1 in 2010 was one of only 3 or 4 times in human history we saw it that high. By 2011, we had $50 silver and 1915 gold. That's about 37-1. Anyone who would have traded an ounce of gold at 85-1 and then into silver and then trade that silver back to gold at 37-1 would have made 2.5, roughly 2.25 ounces of gold for every one they traded. This is playing the ratio. Bottom line, don't mean to go on a big rant here. Silver is the most, in my opinion, the most undervalued asset on the planet that offers the best potential, not just for investment, but also because of the industrial component, and allows you to ultimately switch back into the metal of kings, which will be too expensive for most people before it's all said and done, that being gold. Silver is a substitute for gold, and if you play it right, will enable you to accumulate much more gold simply by holding tight in silver and waiting for the law of averages to correct.
Yeah, it's an interesting hedge, too, against Biden winning, not only because you get the, I mean, you mentioned, obviously, it's used in production, and it's also used as a store of wealth. So it's kind of an interesting twofold hedge, right? You have the ratio, which you can play. Then you have the idea that Biden and Harris might be part and parcel with just nuking the economic system. You mentioned earlier, oh, if the Chinese beat us in backing the digital yuan with gold, of course they're going to beat us. They're much smarter than we are. They're much more shrewd than we are. So I think that'll happen. I think that this them buying all the silver in Moss that you're talking about obviously isn't a coincidence. And then you have the production angle too, because if Biden gets in, you know, we're going to conjure up $100 trillion for this Green New Deal, and what are they going to be making? They're going to be making fucking solar panels. They're going to be, you know, we're going to be putting solar panels across the earth. And
of course they will.
And those need silver.
And don't forget, all of the BRICS members, Brazil and India and South Africa, they've all joined Russia and China in their desire to break free of the U.S. dollar dominance. And so when you look at, you know, one of Putin's head advisors came out publicly the other day and said the Russian ruble is more gold backed than any currency on the planet. They just found, I just read in the paper today, or
67 they found million ounces, right?
The largest gold deposit ever. So you have countries like Russia and China and Brazil and India and South Africa who are just looking for a reason to break free of the dollar hegemony. And that's why I have been saying for a while, I believe we will see two systems, an East and a West. But look at it this way. If they were to beat us to the punch and issue a gold-backed currency overnight, you would see the dollar lose so much of its value and interest rates spike, because who would want to have all of their wealth tied into a debt-based system
in a
country that's 100-plus trillion indebted?
It's
versus,
over if that happens.
Right. China being a creditor nation that has probably more gold, because they're not forthright about it, but some people think they have north of 20,000 tons more gold. That would put it almost three times what the U.S. has. And then you add Russia, South Africa, the gold mining capital of the world, and India, the gold accumulator of the world, into this mix, and they all put their resources together to have a gold-backed BRICS currency,
yep,
it's over overnight. And that is why I think we are moving rapidly down that road and why it is so important to own gold and silver right now, because no matter what, it will always be, I think, in a world that needs a hedge or a tether to hold down and keep in check politicians' desire to always inflate over austerity. They choose the easy path, inflation over the difficult decisions. The only thing that will keep it in check is a tether, and that would be gold. And I do believe it will be part of the next financial system. Whether it comes from China or the BRICS nations or from the U.S., I think it will. And that is why a lot of people give these numbers, like $10,000, and say it will never come back down once it reaches those numbers, because it will be the peg to a new universal system. The only way that it could do that, two things would have to happen. One, price of gold would have to go really high. And two, it would not be convertible one-to-one. It would be a fixed percentage, 10% even, so that they still have the maneuverability as a world reserve currency to do things, but not so much so like we've seen a $4 trillion deficit in the last 6 months. So that is a no-no. That destroys the currency. But having it tethered, and you can only produce as much currency as you have tied to your gold tether, well, there you go. That creates confidence in a system, and it removes the uncertainty of the politician's will to print and to create prosperity through printing, or we call that modern monetary theory and universal basic income. That's the road we are heading down right now. God help us if we do. And that's why we choose gold and silver, because it is a life raft in a boat, the USS Insanity. And that is why we go away from that and buy some gold and silver, not to talk my book, not to get rich, but because it is the only alternative in the world right now that A, is not completely and totally overvalued, and B, the most sophisticated, well-funded, well-informed, influential traders on the planet have been for the past 3 years doing it themselves. And I think before long, everyone will realize what started out as a trickle will turn into a flow, will turn into a flat-out fire hydrant deluge, and you better jump in quick. And I say that with 100% sincerity. I'd love someone to prove me wrong. I would love to know that my children are going to grow up in a country that had opportunity the way that it was for me. I don't think it will. And I think these changes are coming, and either you get rolled by them or roll with them. And I think this is people's last chance to at least acknowledge that this stuff is happening, because it is, like you said, moving at a much more accelerated pace. And I think the world will dictate that acceleration. And especially if you saw something like a new BRICS currency emerge backed by gold overnight, everything that we know as truth will be turned upside down on its head. And so, yeah, things that you're doing, Chris, God bless you for doing them, man. I respect you totally. I'm honored to be part of this show once in a while and to have a relationship with you and to talk to your listeners. I've talked to lots of them on the phone. One of the things that I have pledged the last time we talked, and I'll keep it this time as well, people can email me at andy@milesfranklin. Put Quoth the Raven in the subject line, or Chris sent me. Either one, and I will make sure your listeners get the best price in the country, my personal attention and service, and we'll get them set up in a way that they won't be able to find anywhere else. Now, we're not an online company. We do not sell online. There is far too much identity theft and fraud. I could talk with you at length about conversations I've had with the FBI in making my final decisions on how state-sponsored Eastern European hackers have been targeting the precious metals industry for the last 3 years. The amount of identity theft and consumer fraud we've witnessed made us shut down our online store. So for your listeners who want the best price in the country, personal service from a company in Minnesota that is licensed and bonded, we are the only state in America in a federally non-regulated industry where you must maintain licensing and bonding in order to transact business, has made almost every single company, outside of Minnesota. All of my peers blow off Minnesota. The bonding and licensing alone annually on top of the annual background checks is enough to make every online company say, screw Minnesota, I'll work everywhere else. What it means to your listeners, not only will I personally email them back with a price list and answer their questions, but they are guaranteed, should we do business, of it being the safest way of doing business in a federally non-regulated industry in the United States, hands down. So email me personally at Andy@MilesFranklin, and I will personally reply back. Make sure you put Quoth the Raven in the subject line, and I will personally answer all your questions for your listeners, that is, and make sure that the prices they get will be the best offered by any major retail company in the United States.
Fucking A. I don't know what else to say, Andy. That's it. My man, Andy Scheckman, thank you so much for taking an hour and a half out of your busy schedule. I know you run a giant corporation, and so it's nice that you're able to come on and talk. And I don't know, man. I just, like I said before, we don't do any pre-interviews, pre-briefings. We don't talk in between interviews. And so it was great to catch up with you. It's great to hear your thoughts on things. It's nice, you know, to have some confirmation bias and know that I'm not going insane with a lot of the things that I think about also. I think you're a patriot, and I think it's just a privilege to speak to you. So thanks so much for taking some time today, brother.
Yeah, brother. The feeling is mutual. It's really cool to speak to you, too. And he's telling the truth. We've talked by text, come back on the show soon once, and that was last week. When I called today, you said, let's jump right into it. Everything's teed up. We didn't even talk for more than 10 seconds before this started. I think it's awesome to have a forum. I'm honored to take part in it, that you trust me with talking to your listeners. I'll make it a good experience. You'll never hear a negative word from any of them. I will make personally guarantee that and make sure of it. And I'll always be here if you want to get my take on what's going on, maybe right after the election, see the craziness that's happening. But you got a friend here in the epicenter of stupidity in Minneapolis, Chris, and thank you for letting me share an hour and a half with you. I will look forward to picking up where we left off, hopefully not too far down the road. In the meantime, please take care of yourself, stay well, and God bless you and all your listeners, and we'll look forward to seeing what comes to fruition in the next few weeks, and I'll look forward to chatting with you about the outcome, hopefully right after the election.
Definitely. We'll speak in a month or two, and I'm optimistic for 2021. We'll catch up soon. All right.
All right, brother. Stay well. Talk to you then.
All right. Bye-bye. That was Andy Scheckman of Miles Franklin. What a great guy to talk to, man. Really, you know where I found him? I was listening to Palisades Radio. Another good podcast, by the way, if you want a good podcast to follow. Palisades Radio. He was on there and talking about silver maybe 6 months ago. And I just thought, wow, this guy's exceptionally well-informed. And yeah, it is nice to have some confirmation bias. It's nice to know that I'm not going insane with a lot of the things that I think. But wonderful to hear his opinion. And I've got some great thought leaders, at least as far as I'm concerned, they're thought leaders, coming up over the next week or two. But for right now, I am the fuck out of here. Peace.